Fast forward to today, Colorado has blown up in recent years. For a long time, people lived in Colorado Springs and commuted to Denver. And then it got so expensive, even in the Springs, that people are now commuting from south there, which is Pueblo and Pueblo West. So now the whole development is quickly getting built out. You have all these people that bought the lots 30, 40 years ago that maybe they passed away, their kids own them. Maybe it's just a sunk cost in their mind. They're just paying taxes on it, that bought these for a couple thousand bucks, but now they're worth $30,000, $40,000. So there's opportunity there because you're looking at a failed subdivision that is now getting built out, really.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dan Habercost is a full-time real estate investor with a land and development business on the active side and a portfolio of residential rentals on the passive side. Dan, welcome to the show.
Sam, thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking a bit about our business.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask everyone who comes on the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Absolutely. So my first experience with real estate was actually when I was a teenager. I was 16, managing a portfolio of rentals for my boss at the time and his farm while he traveled the world. That certainly didn't make me want to invest because he had very low-end properties and a terrible dynamic with his tenants. So it was a lot of ripping up nasty carpets on hot, humid Ohio days. But that was actually my first experience at a very young age. Fast forward to college, I was running a landscaping company, going to school full-time, and I'd come from a very lower middle class, conservative, very fearful with everything surrounding money sort of background. And I saw that my siblings, parents, uncles, aunts, everyone, I said, I don't want to live like that. I'd already been working full-time for years as a 20-year-old. So I started reading about different forms of investing, businesses I could start. And like many others, Rich Dad, Poor Dad was the one that really caught my attention. 2 months later, I bought a duplex before I graduated college, ended up moving from Ohio to Colorado because I didn't want to stay there, bought another house here, and quickly realized that if I wanted to scale any sort of portfolio, I needed to figure out how to make a substantial income. You know, you hear about all the low and no money down strategies for getting started, which is great for a couple properties. But if you want a sizable portfolio, you or a partner needs to have a lot of money. This is a cash intensive business. So started a land and development company here, building houses, buying and selling land, just depending on the parcel. And then that feeds the passive investing. So I'm 25, financially independent at this point. And along the train of commercial investing, that's where I'm going next year. I don't want to buy more houses or duplexes. I'm going to move into the commercial space because I've really been able to scale my income with the active business. And I haven't scaled my investing quite the same way. So that's where I'm at today.
Man, that's fantastic. I love just a thought process there for you on how you're going to scale and where you're going to go next in business. And just to make sure I understand, your next iteration is going to be what again? Can you define that for us?
Yeah. So this is part of what I'm working on right now for going into next year. I have quite a bit of cash ready to go, and I'm narrowing down what sort of asset exactly I want to go after in the commercial space. I'm thinking it's going to be a mix of office and industrial because I know some people in that space who do very well. And the shortest way to get where you want to go with the least amount of mistakes, in my opinion, is finding someone who's where you want to be and learning from them. So anyways, a little more work I have to do on my end to make that decision and set the clear goals for next year, but I don't want to keep buying houses.
Gotcha. No, completely understand. Completely understand. Well, and from what I understand, though, you're not buying just houses. I mean, you're doing land and development. So you're buying the land and then building the houses on it, right? So you're doing ground up builds, but then what about the land side of the business? Why you mentioned that sometimes you're holding assets, sometimes you're getting rid of them. What's that about?
Yep. So with the land, some I sell for cash, some I sell for notes and just carry the mortgage myself. And then I build on the prime parcels. But the reason land has been such an opportunity, and just to kind of put this in a way for your listeners to think about it, there's the passive side, which are the rentals, and then there's the active side. And I think of those as two different buckets. So we're talking about the active bucket right now. And the reason land works so well is because it's an inefficient market. I remember reading about this concept, and it came from the world of equities, I think in the 70s, where they say, okay, you know, when you're looking at stocks, there are millions of rational players looking at the price all the time. So the price will approach intrinsic value. Now, there are a lot of faults in that theory because humans aren't very rational, but it's certainly more applicable to stocks than it is real estate. And within the world of real estate, if you look at houses or apartments, it's fairly applicable. You have a lot of money chasing those properties and a lot of intelligent people underwriting them. Whereas land, for example, not a lot of people understand it. It's not as exciting. People just ignore it because they don't really know about zoning and soil quality and building. They just don't know. So it's just not a sexy asset the way houses or apartments are. And because of that, here's the key. Because of that, there are huge mispricings all over. It is not difficult to buy land at 30 or 40 cents on the dollar with, in my business, it's been between $100 and $150 spent on mailers to get a $35,000 parcel at $12,000 to $15,000 under contract, right? So that's really the land business. It all starts with an understanding of that concept and then applying it to that asset. And then with each parcel, okay, am I going to flip this one? Should we build on it? What's the move? So that's why I like land. And when I think about the space I just mentioned of the niche where you have a mixture of industrial and office, that is a little bit more niche. It's not like multifamily apartments or many other spaces, still competitive, but in some ways that concept applies there too.
Yeah, that's intriguing. I've long looked at land as, you know, I own some land right now. It's one of those things that it's a compelling asset class. There's just not, what's it going to do? Flood? I mean, you're going to wait for the water to go down. Like I used to do that when we were in the parking business, right? You know, we'd buy parking lots in dense urban centers, you know, not dense urban centers, but in central business districts. And it was like, well, what's going to go wrong with this? That was always my line. Like, what's our risk here? It's going to flood. I mean, wait for the water to go down and then we can go back to parking cars. And it's kind of the same idea. Or it's like you're buying dirt. And I mean, worst case scenario, you know, you're stuck with a piece of parcel of land that you can't sell. Have you had that happen yet? Mm-hmm.
No, not lost money yet. I've had a couple where I made mistakes and we didn't make much, but no loss of money or nothing I haven't sold as of today.
Right. Yeah. How does someone take that model and turn it into something that actually produces and not just pays the bills, but produces a healthy income? Like, what does that look like?
I would start with just one thing. So don't try and build a few houses and buy and sell land. I would just start with buying and selling land because it's very simple. And for me, what has worked, I have done all infill lots. So what I mean by that, for those of you who aren't super familiar with development, you can take large tracts of land and buy and sell those, but that's a very different sort of asset. There's a lot more due diligence that goes into it. What I'm taking is someone took a huge tract of land, brought utilities in, did the platting, subdividing, so on and so forth, where I have a shovel-ready lot that I'm buying and selling. So the key to these markets is they're outside of growing metros, where new homes are being built. There's both builders and users looking for land. And again, the fact that it already has been subdivided and utilities are already there makes the due diligence very, very, very simple because you just have thousands of lots that are exactly the same. So I can just send out letters like, hey, Sam, I see your lot at such and such address. I'll give you 10 grand for it. If interested, call me. That's it. And so it makes it very simple. So I would start with the buying and selling of land to generate income that you can then invest. Potentially, if you want to get into building houses, you can, but there's a lot of risks involved with contractors and that sort of thing. So I would have a number of cautionary tales for you there.
Sure. But, yeah, that's intriguing. This is more just a personal curiosity, you know, than anything. I mean, on an infill lot, though, you would think that the value has been extracted because the upside for the developer was getting utilities and streets in. The upside... Mm-hmm. You know, it was getting the plat maps put in place and getting all the, I'm not even sure the right words, but getting everything, you know.
All the entitlements
done, right. Mm-hmm. So by that point in time, how are you still finding value in buying individual lots?
That's a great question. So failed subdivisions. There's three markets I've had success in doing buying and selling the land, and they're all failed subdivisions from many, many years ago. So for example, the one I'm down south here of the Springs that I was telling you about, the same developer who did Lake Havasu in Arizona, for anyone familiar with that, came and did the Pueblo Reservoir in Pueblo West in the 70s. I don't know the details, but he went broke, lost all the land, got maybe 10, 20% built out, and it sat there very sleepy, not a lot going on for decades. Fast forward to today, Colorado has blown up in recent years. For a long time, people lived in Colorado Springs and commuted to Denver, and then it got so expensive even in the Springs that people are now commuting from south of there, which is Pueblo and Pueblo West. So now the whole development is quickly getting built out. You have all these people that bought the lots 30, 40 years ago that maybe they passed away, their kids own them. Maybe it's just a sunk cost in their mind. They're just paying taxes on it, that bought these for a couple $1,000s, but now they're worth $30,000, $40,000. So there's opportunity there because you're looking at a failed subdivision that is now getting built out, really.
You're picking them up because the other people don't know what they're worth and don't want to deal with it. and you're holding it. And then what are you doing? Selling owner finance or?
Some owner finance, some for cash. I will say you'd be amazed how many people know exactly what they're worth, but they hate realtors or they just need quick cash or they're rich and old and don't care. I mean, it's really amazing. I have bought more. I've done just over 60 of these lots and I've bought more from wealthy old people than I have from people who don't know or who are poor.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. And I love the idea that you're getting niche, right? You said, hey, look, I'm going to buy land. I'm only going to buy infill lots. I mean, that's like you said, it's a very different game to say, hey, I'm going to buy infill lots. Or you're going to say, hey, I'm going to buy parcels no smaller than 5 acres in, you know, within 3 hours of any major city. Like that's a very different ball game. What has prevented you from, now that you have that kind of figured out, I mean, do you intend on scaling that down to as you move more into commercial? Will your land business continue to fund your commercial operation?
Yeah, that's the plan. Exactly. I'm looking to move into another market. I'm looking to double down on the market I'm in. And I've been able to do that by hiring people. So I have two acquisitions managers. I have realtors that basically sell everything for me. And just the value of building a personal brand has really been shown to me. I have a software engineer who came to me who wants to build a system to scrub public records for me and get everything, all the data that other people can't get. Because, you know, every county's nuanced as far as how these records are posted. So I want to double down where I already am doing well in land, add another market, which I spent quite a bit of time looking into and doing some research there, and just scale my income and then keep building a few houses and then take all that money and move it over into long-term investments.
Right. That's great. How much money did it take for you in the beginning to get your land business really off the ground? Because you got to pay people down payments. You got to get stuff like that. And I've had a couple other people on the show, you know, that they've got programs and this, not to knock any of those guests that came on because they, you know, they've been very successful in it, but they're like, it doesn't take any money to get involved in land. I'm like, it always takes money to get involved in something. Yeah. So yeah, talk to us about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So it was only a couple $1,000 because I started even further down I-25 down the Front Range to an even more rural, sleepy town, Colorado City. And I was buying lots there from between $150 to $1,000, depending on whether there's utilities, and selling them from 4 to 10 times of what I was purchasing them for. So it cost me marketing. I was spending about $600 a month in mailers. And then, of course, buying the lot. So I mean, if you have $5,000 or $10,000, you can get this done. And if you find a similar market, and just like Pueblo West, that was a failed subdivision from actually the 60s. So same sort of thing. And actually that one now is growing. Prices have gone up and I'm building a house down there right now. So yeah, it doesn't necessarily take much, but I would say the less money you spend, the more effort you need to put in and vice versa.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. You're going to do it. Well, you're going to pay for it one way or the other, either in sweat or in dollars. And that holds true in real estate and everything else. I always say that, you know, you can squeeze more of the grape if you are an active investor, right?
Yep.
But it's going to cost you time and money, or you can be a limited partner or be a passive investor. And maybe your returns aren't as good as if you were the active investor, but man, you know, you're going to pay for it one way or the other in money or in time. So,
yep.
And hopefully as a passive investor, you get paid. You just, the returns aren't maybe as high as they could be.
Yeah.
Although I've had some passive investments that have done really, really well. So I can't complain about that either. Hey, so talk to us about this. What are some surprises or pitfalls along the way that you've experienced?
Great question. So in the land business, I would say when I was doing it before I had an acquisitions manager, I'm a little bit sloppy with details. There's a couple times where I forgot to check back taxes and ended up getting hurt because of that. So that was one thing. But contractors, if you do go the route of building, but also this is applicable to rehabs, do your due diligence. Don't give them money up front unless they're just highly recommended by a bunch of people you trust, and get solid referrals from multiple people you trust when dealing with contractors. That's probably one of the biggest things. And then, yeah, on the side of investing, I think the importance of management and operation is often underappreciated. Everyone talks about the deal and making money on the buy, and that's great. And that is extremely important. But if you get a great deal and you have constant turnover and poor management, it's not going to be a great deal for long. Whereas if you get an okay deal and then you have the same tenants for 10 years, 20 years, that's going to be quite profitable. So I think whether you're managing yourself or you have a property manager, in this context, I'd imagine most of your listeners have property managers. Make sure you vet them just as thoroughly as the contractors. They need to be highly recommended from people you trust. Check the reviews online. Think through how you would do it if it was your business, because it is your business, and ask them about their screening process. Ask them, well, how do you handle this with different problems you've had come up? How do they handle that? The due diligence upfront will save you massive headache down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. Talk to us about this. What's one of the major challenges or one of the biggest challenges that you face in your business today?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think niching down, well, not getting shiny object syndrome. I definitely am one that tends to go in a million different directions, and sticking to what really has made me money and will continue to make me money and scaling that. And again, I can be sloppy with systems and processes and hiring people. So I need to get better there. Thankfully, I've got good people and they have picked up where I have slack, but I need to be better about processes, systems, explaining them to my acquisitions managers so that they can properly do what they need to scale this. So I can be really weak on the integration side, I guess. Right. So that's probably been it.
Right. Yeah. And that was my follow-up question to that. What's one thing you'd like to change about yourself or your business in the next year? But it sounds like that's going to be the same answer.
Yeah. And I've gotten better. You know, I make decisions more slowly. I think through them more and I've written SOPs and that sort of thing, but it's a constant work in progress. And I've gotten much better at saying no. So I think just self-awareness goes a long way. A bit of introspection.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely right. I always say that no is more powerful than yes. For those of us that struggle with the say no, I think I used to say that my yes button was really big and my no button was really small. And I'm trying to like peel the stickers off and change them out where it's like, no is really, really big. It takes a lot for me to say yes now. And with that, you know, I've not suffered any. And actually, so I'm with you, man. Like learning to say no more often is certainly a powerful skill set. Well, talk to us about this. What does it mean for you if you were to say, hey, this is when I know I am successful or that I've achieved success? What does that look like?
That's a great question. And part of the reason I've slowed down a bit this quarter, because I was trying to buy a commercial property by the end of the year this year, felt a bit of anxiety about it and a little bit overwhelmed. I thought, wait, all the whys that initially caused me to start a business have been solved. So I need to step back, think about what I'm trying to accomplish from here on out, and then align goals that fit that, right? And question what I'm doing. So I spent quite a bit of time doing that. And so really the first step, which I'm past, is just being financially independent myself, not having any reliance on a job or someone else for income. Number two, I want to help a couple people in my family. So that will step two. There's some things I want to do there for my parents, for a couple of my siblings. My little sister's disabled, so I want to be able to help her. So I think that's the next milestone for me, is there's some things I want to do for them. And once I hit that, reexamine and think through what I want to do next.
Man, that's fantastic. I like that. Can you define the word impact for us and then tell us what kind of impact you believe or that you want to have on other people?
Impact. Oh, I wasn't expecting this question. All right. Well, in general, I guess it would be, how do I not use the word in the definition? causing a meaningful change in someone's thinking or life, I think would be my quick definition of impact, causing someone to think or act differently because of something you taught or showed them. And how am I causing impact was the question.
Yeah, what kind of impact do you believe you have or do you want to have on other people?
Oh, great. Yeah, great question. I have really found I enjoy developing good people. So I'm going to meet with my acquisitions manager here that's locally after this. And she is sharp. She's not from the U.S. She immigrated, had a hard life, and it shows a lot of promise. And I really enjoy helping her, developing her, seeing her make more money than she expected. So that's something I want to do more of in the future. Right now, I host the real estate group here in town that helped me quite a bit when I moved here. So I'm doing it there as well. I'm actually doing the talk next week. And I really enjoy helping good people. At the same time, if you're telling me you've been looking into it for 3 years and not sure what to do, then we probably won't a very fun conversation. But if you're willing to take action, then yeah, I like helping good people.
Right. Yeah, there is a caveat there. You don't want to pour into a bottomless bucket. That's for sure, man. Fantastic. Dan, I've enjoyed this. Let's jump here into the final four questions. What is a resource you find you can't live without?
Oh, that's a great question. PropStream, really, that's probably the software I use most, as simple as that is. PropStream and just the county assessor's website.
Right. Yeah, man. That's great. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that goes back to screening your contractors and property managers. Those are two rough jobs within the world of real estate. A lot of times people in them aren't doing so well. And so screen your property managers and your contractors thoroughly, and that'll save you a lot of headaches.
Oh yeah, I can attest to that, man. I owned a flooring company. Gosh, what was this? This would have been 2004, maybe. And at that point in time, we had probably 15 or 20 subcontractors, and they were always having new subs come in, and we got off on our paperwork tracking, right? And so we didn't get the workers' comp exemption forms from some of those guys that were self-employed. So at the year end, we had a $15,000 workers' comp bill. And it was wait, but all I needed, and it was just like, oh man, like, yeah. Getting your ducks in a row and dealing with paperwork and contractors. I mean, God bless you. I've done too much of that. I'm not going back. So for those of you who are thinking development, you know, knock yourself out, but you and Dan can have it all.
Yeah. So
that's fantastic, man. Let's look at this. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing I'm doing is hosting and spending time with new people the way people did with me. So yeah, that would probably be the biggest thing.
That's awesome, man. Dan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, learn more about you or your company, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, just Dan Habercross on Facebook or Instagram. I've made some videos that just answer questions on YouTube that I get asked all the time, so I can send them to people. So Dan Habercross there are great ways to find me.
That's awesome. Dan, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Likewise, Sam. This was fun.
Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.